Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
This is Jessica from Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and we have a guest today, which is fun because not only did you just write a book, but you are also a podcaster. Tell us about rabbits.
Well, thanks for having me, Jessica. My name is Terry Miles, and I did write a book called Rabbits, and I'm also responsible for the Public Radio Alliance and that network's slate of podcasts, which include the Rabbits podcast, Tannis, and the Last Movie podcasts as well.
So Rabbits so far has been one season, and I think you mentioned the second season is in production.
It's coming very soon. June, most likely, perhaps the first week of July, but
not too far away from the publication of your book. So this book is set in the same world as the podcast, but it's a distinct story.
It is completely separate from the podcast, although, like you said, it does take place in the same world. It's about Kay, the protagonist, who goes on it's sort of like two-pronged. There's the mystery of the game of rabbits, and then there's also the mystery that's unfolding, the hunt for the sort of the thriller aspect of the book, I suppose.
So where did the idea of this come from? Basically, it's an alternate reality game, which I'm not sure if too many of our listeners are familiar with what an alternate reality game is.
Yeah, well, an alternate reality game would, I'm sure I define it in the book, most likely, but it is just a game that takes place using the real world as its canvas. So a lot of it historically has been promotional stuff, like I Love Bees for the video game Halo was really great. You know, payphones would ring and people, it was really well thought out and exciting, and sort of introduced a lot of people, including me, to that world. There was The Beast, which was the Steven Spielberg, Kubrick written AI movie. There was a name in the end credits of the movie that had a very strange designation, and that led people down the rabbit hole into, you know, real life. The TV show Lost did something very similar, where they would play ads at the end or during the episodes, and then you would, you know, go to those places and fall into a real world adventure tied to those properties. It's been a lot of marketing, but there's also a large audience for the type of, you know, game playing in real life, geocaching, all kinds of cool stuff.
I actually know quite a few geocachers myself, and this is like their time, especially during quarantine last summer. You know, it was like kind of a fun thing you could do, but also socially distanced. So what I really liked about this story was that the characters were, they were a lot of fun to travel with. Kay has, well, actually he has several terrible things that happened to him when he was younger, aside from the fact that he lost his parents, but he had these really close friends who had amazing 90s taste in music, by the way. There's very few times that I will, actually, I have to say there are no times that I have read a book where Tori Amos music was ever referenced as music of the 90s. Everybody wants to talk about Kurt Cobain and grunge, which is actually fine because I love all of that, but literally have never seen Tori come up in a fiction book where something takes place in the 90s. These two girls who he's family friends with introduce him to the idea of this game called Rabbits. And then something happens and his life is never the same again. The early days of the internet were weird. The internet is still weird.
Well, there was, yeah, I mean, that was, I was there at the beginning. I mean, like the new, like news groups and everything, it was a new world to explore. And Tori Amos, of course. Like I also loved, and you know, Pearl Jam and Nirvana at the time, you know, being Pacific Northwestern. And but that Little Earthquakes was just as it was in the same. There was no, you know, no different. Like it was such a part of me and all my friends. Like we just loved it, male and female. Everybody loved Tori Amos. Where
I mean, I'm remembering, and I think you know when you talk about you these old Geocities. Is it GeoCities or Geocities? Now I'm having my own little Mandela effect.
I said Geocities, but Geocities. I don't care. There was no pronunciation guide on the site.
I get made fun of a lot for that one. There were always like these weird little GeoCities sites that people would put up, and you'd basically, you know, follow them down this rabbit hole, which is actually, I wonder, is that where the title comes from? Like following the clues?
It's hard to say what came first, the game or the name. What is the source of the mystery? Well, like so many, you know, creepypastas and internet memes and mysteries and Cicada 3301 and like, yeah, there are like, what if there is a game? You know, what if rabbits is real? I guess the rules of the game are sort of what define the game, but they're so nebulous in a lot of ways, depending on, on who you ask in the book. Like do you have to find the game to play the game, or do you play the game to find the game? It's a mysterious thing. It's hard to I don't want to define it too much because it's so much fun. I hope it's so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. I like that we sort of figure things out with Kay. And as we figure things out, things become more expansive and more confusing at the same time. So it's this game. And basically, ultimately, you describe it as there have been, before the beginning of the game, before the beginning of the book, there have been 10 iterations of the game that we know of, because there are possibly other ones that have been happening all throughout history. And the game opens sort of where there's like a key phrase, which is it the door is open?
Yeah.
So the phrase, the door is open, is uttered. And those who are playing and not going about their life oblivious to the fact that this is happening are drawn in and following all of these clues. It's crazy because in a way it makes me think of old arcade games, because there's like the circle, there's the score as to who won which iteration, and there's legendary players. But Kay, it seems like he's kind of been played by this game his entire life, even before he realized it. And after he basically is on his own, he doesn't have family anymore, finds himself in an arcade just talking about rabbits, theoretically, with a bunch of other nerds. And he's got his friend Chloe, who's sort of like his best friend, who's aware of it. And then his mentor is the magician who owns the arcade.
There's a little more background on the game. There are folks who believe that it started before the modern iteration in 1959, which is where the players began to number the games. They found the graphic of a rabbit on a laundromat in Seattle, and from that point forward, that was the first iteration. And then not evenly spaced, but the other iterations come after. And Chloe and Baron, Kay's two closest friends, they have different backgrounds and ended up, you know, she was a musician and he was a stockbroker, trader, or some type of financial shenanigans. And they ended up sort of just bonded by the experience of the game and the sort of mystery of the game and the longing to be part of something like mysterious and you know, interesting to them. It seems to fit in with all of their kind of personalities and desires and interests. And the magician would be, I guess, considered the mentor character, like the older guard, the previous generation of players. He no longer officially plays the game. He's just advising people who do.
You talk a little bit about the Mandela effect in the book, which I've always found to be this absolutely fascinating phenomenon where people remember history differently. There's like a whole, there's people who seem to collectively remember Nelson Mandela passing away in prison versus, you know, becoming president of South Africa and everything else.
The Berenstain Bears.
Yes. So that is, and that is such, like, that is such a thing, especially as a librarian, because I remember it as the Berenstain Bears, but it's the Berenstain Bears when you look. And I feel like collectively that's one that almost everybody can relate to.
Yeah. And Shazam, the genie movie that never existed.
Right. Yeah, which I think Sinbad, as a joke a few years back, made a fake trailer for it, which was hilarious.
Yeah, that's funny.
So just thinking about my own little weird Mandela effect. So I'm a big Neverending Story fan, and I recently had to do a little bit of research about the book and the film and the author, and there's a lot of great stuff there. But one thing that had happened to me a few years ago was I was in a doctor's office, and they, for some reason, because I guess the kids in the doctor's office needed to be upset by all the upsetting things that happened in that movie, it was on, and there was the very first scene where you meet the rock biter and the snail rider played by Deep Roy, and Deep Roy, the voice was not at all what I remember. He had this very twangy Southern accent. And I was like, I've seen this movie a million times and I know he didn't sound like that. And then they got to a few other scenes and there were other just like noise things that I did not remember. And again, like, I'm going crazy. I'm thinking to myself, I've seen this movie. This is not what I remember, but it's in front of me. But in the research, I found out that actually I was watching the European cut where the dubs were different and Steven Spielberg was brought in to change some of the music and the noises. So at least that was explained to me.
Oh my gosh. That is so interesting. That must have been like, that's so cool.
It was.
Weirdly cool in retrospect. I'm sure at the time it was.
Very unsettling.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I'm sure there are literary and cinematic anomalies. I'm just in season two of Rabbits digging up some other ones, other experiences from other people. But for me,
just those weird things that happen and
the synchronicities, the very strange, like the 444 and like any number of strange, like you're wearing, you know, Led Zeppelin shirt and then you walk into a store and they're playing Led Zeppelin
I was driving down from New England with my husband and we were listening to a random mix of all of the music that was on my iPod at the time, and as we passed New Haven, the exit for New Haven, we were listening to Peace Frogs by the Doors that has that line, blood on the streets in the town of New Haven. And that happened exactly as we were passing the sign. So right. Things like that. What amazes me is that, you know, like sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, but that type of truth also makes good fiction, because when you're reading a book like Rabbits, I feel like everybody can sort of relate to just those weird fringy things that happen. Like even if you're the most, you know, the most concrete thinker and you don't, you know, you always have your eyes in front of you and you don't think of anything else, there's always something that happens in your life that sort of brings like that tickle on the back of your neck.
Well, that, yeah, chasing that is the entirety of my life. I mean, that's that sort of sense of mystery and that strangeness or weirdness in the real world, not uncanny really, but more like just like a sense that there could be something else beneath the surface, you know, something operating that's you know, unknowable by our current in by science currently. Yeah, that's sort of the chasing that rabbit or dragon it has been, you know, the guiding principle of everything I do creatively. That's it. That's everything.
So you talked a little bit about creepypastas before. I am a huge fan of creepypastas. So if I remember correctly, it comes from like a few different terms of copy. Is it copy paste or copy pasta? Like just different stories that have been passed down through the internet. And then the creepypastas are like, they're almost like modern urban legends is really what it is. I mean, when you think of the urban legends that people read in like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which comes up a lot in this podcast because a lot of the librarians here are huge fans of that. Those stories were collected from folklore and they've been passed down and they changed with technology. Creepypastas are like their own version of urban legends, but they were spread on the internet.
Yeah, creepypasta stuff is cool. It was always like, I remember when I was in like, my interest in those kind of things predates creepypasta, but when that started to explode, it was the things that I loved it, but it was too, it just wasn't enough, you know what I mean? So the stuff that came concurrently or afterwards, like the Dianea house, like these sort of meta textual, you know, multimedia projects that seemed more thought out, you know, creepy, like something like Ted the Caver's cool. Like there are like moments of unsettling, like, oh, there's stairs in the middle of the wood. Like, you know, there are great.
Candle Cove, for instance, is a great one.
Yeah, that's great.
Because like everybody remembers these bizarre programs that were on in the 70s. And, you know, like depending on where you are, some people collectively remember them and some people don't.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, like some of the stuff was, it was comforting to see that there are people who are like interested in the same kinds of things that I am. Like that was, it felt like very kindred spirits were digging around the dark corners of the internet and planting seeds, planting fictional seeds.
Kay is chasing, I mean, he's chasing these clues because it becomes a little bit more urgent for him to do so. He finds out from somebody who's rumored to be a previous winner of the game that there's something wrong with it, and it's indicated that he can help fix it, which kicks a lot of the plot in gear. Were you plotting it out very carefully, or did you just sort of follow him where he went in the story?
Like plotting or pantsing?
Yeah, I didn't want to ask that because I feel like we ask that in all of the interviews now that we found out that this exists.
Yeah.
But
it's important. There's a dichotomy there. There's a two approach sort of system going on. For me, I wrote, you know, a lot of the book, just like freely. My agent said, my book agent, are you going to make a Tanis book? And I was like, sure. But it took years. And I was like, not finding my way into that. And then he said, well, he sent editors to talk to me, like editors called me and said, like, let's go. What could its Tanis book be? And then I just started writing a rabbit's book. I just felt more excited about the game and everything that it meant to me and what it could be. And so I just did like 20,000 words of that following, you know, the character and what Kay wanted to do. I was just there, like, you know, and then including, you know, a lot of personal stuff. And then after that, I had to know how it ended. I had to figure it out.
You're working on season 2 of Rabbits now. Are you envisioning the books as a series, or did it end there?
I think there's more rabbits to tell. I mean, there's more iterations of the game to consider. I think
yeah.
It's just so that it continues for our safety.
I you know, it's funny because I found myself just looking up some of the urban legends or the story, you know, the things that were mentioned in it, and it's a lot of fun. I think people are going to have a lot of fun with this one. I think that they'll be, those who've listened to the podcast will enjoy it. Those who have not listened to the podcast will read the book and then go back and listen to the podcast and have a season two to look forward to. And I really loved it. I thought you did it was a really good blend of thriller, a little bit of horror, suspense, and I really enjoyed taking the journey with Kay, with Chloe, with Baron, and with Emily even.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. That's like, fiction has been, I went to school for fiction. I was a musician and then a filmmaker, and the only reason I didn't, my first novel wasn't my thesis, is I got a film into the Toronto Film Festival and I just became
nice.
A filmmaker.
Yeah.
I handed in the screenplay and I was out of school, but I was there for fiction. I was there to write books, and it was really nice to get back into like my first love, which is prose. I mean, I love it all, but like.
So before we close out, So what are some of your favorite internet mysteries or creepypastas? I've already mentioned I love Candle Cove. And I have to say Abandoned by Disney is up there as well.
I think for me, the Dianea house is like head and shoulders over everything about the, like Eric Heisinger, I think is his name. He's like a really, really well-known screenwriter. And I think he writes television as well. Runs a show now. But anyway, like that one was about a house that a bunch of friends that are people are disappearing into this house that appears all over the world, and it's the same house. Like I was just like, it's blogs and messages. It's just so good. That's definitely my favorite. And there are like bizarre layouts in there, like House of Leaves.
Yes, and you mentioned, isn't House of Leaves referenced in Rabbits?
Probably. probably. That's
that's a real mind something or other, because I mean, I can't say because this is a PG-13 podcast, but it's a mind bender.
It's a mind bender for sure. Yeah.
Where can people, so the book is out in early June, Rabbits, the book is out in early June, and where can people find your other podcasts and works?
You can go to terrymiles.com or publicradioalliance.com, and then it's all the stuff should be there.
Awesome. Well, I am very excited for season two of Rabbits and more books. Please come back and talk to us as it unfolds.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Jessica.
Thank you for being here. So this is Jessica. Our guest today was
Terry Miles.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.